Today on Enduring Word with David Guzik, pastor of Calvary Chapel, Santa Barbara.
There's economic ups and downs that not only our nation goes through, but our community goes through, and you experience personally. But through it all, God has been good to us, and He's provided. Oh, I'm not going to say that God gives us everything that's on our great big wish list that we ever want in our life. There's places we wish we could go that we can't. There's things we wish we can have that we don't. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about God feeding us, clothing us, and giving us another day to breathe breath on this earth. That is a display of His glory.
God's glory is displayed in many ways. And in today's message, Pastor David gives us several great examples. We can see evidence of God's magnificence in our own lives right now. We have food, shelter, and clothing. Our basic needs are provided for, and more often than not, God adds many extra blessings to our lives, even when we don't see it right away. God may not give us everything we wish we had, but He never withholds His grace and love from us, no matter what. Now, here's Pastor David with today's message.
Please open up your Bibles to the book of Exodus, chapter 16. We've been following the people of Israel as they make their way out of their slavery in Egypt, and they are headed ultimately towards the land of Canaan, the promised land, what today we would call Israel and a bit beyond modern-day Israel, this land of promise that God had given to Israel. And in the midst of all of that, they had to make this journey from Egypt to Canaan by way of Mount Sinai, and God had important things to work in their lives. Look, we do this not just as a history lesson, although I would find it fascinating just as a history lesson, but we do this because it shows us something about who God is, and it shows us something about who we are in our relationship with God. And that's why we take a look together here, starting at verse 1. And they journeyed from Elim, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they departed from the land of Egypt. Last time we were together in the book of Exodus, we saw that the children of Israel crossed over the Red Sea, came to the other side. They saw a tremendous victory over those who had enslaved them for hundreds of years by seeing those dead Egyptians washed up on the shores of the Red Sea. But we also saw this. They came out of it singing. They were worshiping God. They were singing songs of gratitude and glorification to God. Well, that's all fine and good, but then you've got to walk through the wilderness. And they came from a place, verse 1 tells us, a place called Elim. We know that was a place with a lot of oases and palm trees, and it was an easy place to live, a lot of comfort, a lot of goodness. God called them out of Elim and sent them towards Mount Sinai. But in between Elim and Sinai, in the middle, was, you saw the phrase, the wilderness of Sin. Now, you might think that that's just like a symbolic description. Aha! I know what that's all about. It's all about what? It's all about sin and the wilderness of sin. And I think I could preach a good message on that. Here's my preaching verse. Are you in the wilderness of sin this morning? But look, actually, the wilderness of sin doesn't have anything to do with sin. Not really. It's just a geographic description. Now, as we're going to see this morning and later on, Israel did plenty of sinning in the wilderness of sin. But there's no connection between the words to sin and the description of this place. Matter of fact, you could put a Z instead of a S in that just as easily, and you could call it the wilderness of Zin. But it's just the idea. They're going from one place to another place. And now, verse 2, then the whole congregation of the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said to them, oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat and when we ate bread to the full, for you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. What a fascinating psychological study verses 2 and 3 are about the heart that finds it so easy to complain. Now notice this. I want you to notice the nature of their complaint. Number one, their complaint had some connection to reality. What was the connection with reality? They needed food. They were now 30 days out of Egypt. They had been on this trip from Egypt for about 30 days, and we can estimate that their supplies that they brought with them from Egypt had about run out by this time. And now they were looking ahead at this wilderness, which was not like a Sahara Desert kind of sandy wilderness. Think more of sagebrush and lightly grassed area. Not exactly hospitable, but on the other hand, it wasn't like a sandy desert. But still, they were looking ahead at this somewhat desolate wilderness and thinking, we got to be fed for the next years or months or however long we're out here in the wilderness. Where's this food going to come from? There's no restaurants. There's no grocery stores. There's no obvious provision of food. What are we going to do? Matter of fact, I think that the complaining was based more on the anticipation of hunger than it was present starvation. They weren't starving to death right then and there. But they were looking ahead and thinking, if we don't have food soon, then we are going to starve. What are you going to do for us, Moses? And they complained against Moses. And did you see the phrase? It says, first of all, in verse 2, it says that they complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. But then did you see what it says there in verse 3? It says that they sat by the pots of meat and when we ate bread to the full in Egypt. Did you see how they're distorting the truth of the past? Friends, you know, and I know, what apparently they didn't know, at least at that moment of time, that they lived for hundreds of years as wretched slaves in Egypt. They had the snap of the whip-like lash upon their back. They were forced to do work without pay. They were treated like animals. They were fed with scraps. And now they're looking back to those nostalgic days of, oh, wasn't it great back in Egypt? It's amazing how our minds can do this. How sometimes our minds can look at the past and in that creative memory aspect that we have in our heads, we can make the past seem so much worse than it actually was sometimes. Or sometimes we can make the past seem so much better than it actually was sometimes. It's a gift to be able to see the past correctly. And here it was with them, they weren't. And they were thinking, oh, wouldn't it be better if God just killed us all? We were in the bliss of our slavery in Egypt. You take a look back and say, what are you even talking about? You were slaves back then. You had no freedom. You had no liberty. What were you doing? Well, this is how they were thinking in the midst of their discouragement. Now, I have to say that when we talk about this idea of complaining, it's always a little bit difficult to talk about it. Because sometimes, and I'm just going to be very honest with you, I think sometimes it's possible for pastors or for preachers or whoever to be overly sensitive to complaining and to criticism. Sometimes we just have our skin is too thin, and we overreact to complaints or to criticism and things like that. And the last thing you want is an atmosphere where people feel condemned for criticizing or for complaining in some way or another. But I will tell you where it is very dangerous. Let me tell you this very frankly. This is where it's dangerous. It's not so much when you complain against people, it's when you complain against the Lord. Now, later on, in verse 8 specifically of this chapter, we're going to find out very plainly that their complaint, they thought they were complaining against Moses and Aaron, but they were really complaining against the Lord. And friends, that's how I feel. If you've got a complaint against me, maybe it's justified, maybe it's not. At least I should be willing to hear it. But what's far more concerning, especially in your spiritual life, is if you're actually having a complaint against God. And sometimes complaints against God masquerade as complaints against people. This is a difficult thing. And we need spiritual discernment to negotiate our way through this very difficult aspect of Christian living. In any regard, look at verse 4 with me together. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain quota every day that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not. And it shall be on the sixth day that they shall prepare what they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily." Do you see what God's saying here? It's really kind of a surprise. I wish I could wipe your minds clean so that you could see how strange this actually is. You're hungry. God says, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to rain down bread from heaven upon you. Isn't that weird? Does God normally provide for our needs that way? Oh, Lord, I really need this. Okay, great. I'm going to drop it down literally from the sky, and you can pick it up off the ground. God said, you need bread? I'm going to rain down bread from heaven. Here's a little principle. Bread doesn't normally rain down from heaven. But it was going to for Israel in this circumstance. This was a completely unexpected way that God would provide for their need. Now, later on, Israel called this bread from heaven by a different name. Do you know the name they called it by? You know it. It's manna. But I want you to notice, never, or maybe I should say rarely, be a little reserved this, rarely does God call it manna. That's what the people called it. Do you know what God mostly calls it? Bread from heaven. You can find it right here in Exodus 16. You can find it in Nehemiah 9 and Psalm 78. And in Psalm 105, God calls it bread from heaven. And at one time in Psalm 78, he calls it angels' food. I don't know if that's what angels actually eat. I don't know if it tasted like angels' food cake. I don't know what exactly. But Psalm 78 calls it angels' food. Now, by the way, a little teaser for just a little bit in the message. I am going to reveal to you what manna tasted like. It's in the Bible. Did you know that was in the Bible? The Bible tells us what manna tasted like, and it's going to be shocking to some of you. No, really, you won't predict this. Starting now at verse 6, it says, then Moses and Aaron said to all the children of Israel, at evening you shall know that the Lord has brought you out of the land of Egypt. And in the morning you shall see the glory of the Lord, for he hears your complaints against the Lord. But what are we that you complain against us? And Moses said, this shall be seen when the Lord gives you meat to eat in the evening, and in the morning bread to the full. For the Lord hears your complaints which you make against him. And what are we? Your complaints are not against us, but against the Lord. Okay, first of all, that just tells you what I told you before, that their complaints, they thought they were complaining against Moses and Aaron when actually they were complaining against the Lord. And that's the dangerous place to be. But secondly, I want you to notice this, that God said, I am going to show you something different. And as I show you something different, I am going to display my glory to you. It's right there in verse 7. In the morning you shall see the glory of the Lord. Now, actually, this meant two things. First of all, as God revealed this to the people, there was going to be sort of a special display of his radiant glory. But I'll tell you what it meant in an even greater way. In an even greater way, it was a display of God's glory that he fed them with this bread from heaven every morning for the next decades as they made their way through the wilderness into the promised land. I have to say that as I thought about this week, this really touched my heart. Because I thought about that. The daily supply of bread from heaven was a demonstration of God's glory. Well, I don't know if you think about it that way, but I sure did. You see, usually I'm thinking of a demonstration of God's glory to be something so out of the ordinary, so different than everyday life. If God were to display his glory, it'd have to be like, you know, in a big ball of flame right here on the platform. Or some radiant presence, you know, emanating out. And everybody would gasp and go, oh, it's the glory of the Lord. Something to attract a lot of attention, bells and whistles. But you know what God says? God says, many times I will display my glory by providing for your needs day in and day out and showing myself to be a faithful God to you. Ladies and gentlemen, can we not say with great confidence that in this we have seen the glory of the Lord? Well, I don't want to minimize for a moment difficult times that any of you are going through. And I'm sure that some of you, either in the past or maybe in the present, it could even be in the future. There's some difficult times for you to go through. There's economic ups and downs that not only our nation goes through, but our community goes through and you experience personally. But through it all, God has been good to us and he's provided. Well, I'm not going to say that God gives us everything that's on our great big wish list that we ever want in our life. There's places we wish we could go that we can't. There's things we wish we can have that we don't. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about God feeding us, clothing us, and giving us another day to breathe breath on this earth. That is a display of his glory. That's a testimony to God's goodness. He gives us clothes on our back. He gives us food in our belly. God has been good to us. And this is what I want you to see. It is a display of his glory that he does this. And how often I've had an insensitive heart towards this. How often I've refused to see the power and the goodness, indeed the glory of God in his everyday provision for me and for those people around me. And I just think we should just take a step back and say, thank you, Jesus. Thank you for this display of your glory. Thank you that I have enough to eat and clothes on my back. And even though there are some times that are easier and there's some times that are more difficult, you have glorified yourself through the provision in my life. That's what he was saying here. In the morning, you shall see the glory of the Lord. Now, verse 9. Then Moses spoke to Aaron, say to all the congregation of the children of Israel, come near before the Lord, for he has heard your complaint. Now it came to pass, as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the children of Israel, that they looked towards the wilderness, and behold, the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, I've heard the complaints of the children of Israel. Speak to them, saying, at twilight you shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread, and you shall know that I am the Lord your God. Israel, I'm going to provide for your needs. You want meat to eat? I'll bring it to you. Do you want bread? I'll bring it to you. And I'm sure all Israel's thinking, how is this going to happen? Are deliveries of food going to come to us from Egypt? Is, you know, a grocery store going to appear in the midst of the wilderness? How, God, how are you going to do this? God says, don't worry about it. I have unseen treasuries of resources that I can provide for you from. You don't have to have his provision figured out before he brings it to you. Here he's going to provide for Israel, and he's going to do it by his glory. So look at here, verse 13 and 14. It's wonderful. It says, so it was that the quails came up at evening and covered the camp, and in the morning the dew lay all around the camp. And when the layer of dew lifted there on the surface of the wilderness was a small round substance as fine as frost on the ground. You have two kinds of food miraculously coming to Israel. One is meat, quail. All these quail come and they just sort of dive bomb the camp of Israel. And there's quail everywhere. Now this is really remarkable, although you should know that it is well known that in that part of the world there are migrations of quail that regularly happen, and it has happened that large quantities of quail have just been dropped down upon people as a part of this migratory pattern of the birds. It may be that what God did was that he took a naturally occurring phenomenon and he amplified it. He pumped it up. He made it so much bigger than has ever happened before or will ever happen again, but he gave them miraculously quail to eat in the wilderness. And what do you think they did with those little birds? Well, they took them, they plucked them, and they fried them in a pan and they ate them up. Nice little recipes being passed about, quail this, quail that. They enjoyed the quail that God brought to them. I thought about sharing a few quail recipes with you. I don't really know. That was the first kind of food. The second kind of food, look at it in verse 14. It was a small, round substance as fine as frost on the ground. So it was meat in the evening. Now, by the way, the quail was not a regularly occurring event. The quail seems to be sent occasionally. But this, that they experienced in the morning, came every day. Or 6 days a week, I should say, as we'll see. It was a small, round substance as fine as frost on the ground. It was small, it was round, it was fine. Therefore, it was not easy to gather, and it had to be carefully swept up. Now, Exodus chapter 16, verse 31 better describes this, and I'll get a little bit ahead of myself to describe it to you. It says that it was like coriander seed. That would make it about the size of a sesame seed. Do you have that in your mind? Scattered all across the ground. It also says that it was sweet like honey and that it was the color of bdellium, that is a pearl-like color. They either baked it or boiled it. Now, what did it taste like? Well, I'll tell you this, that Jewish legends tell us that it tasted like whatever you wanted it to taste like. Now, those are just legends, but I find a lot of humor sometimes in these Jewish legends. Wouldn't that be amazing? Oh, Lord, today I want that carne asada burrito. And there it was. Boom, you take a spoonful of manna, and there it is in your mouth. You know, or whatever it would be. You know, just be, oh, wouldn't that be great? Now, I don't think that's true, but that's a Jewish legend. No, the Bible actually tells us what it tasted like. Numbers chapter 11, verse 8 says that they ground it on millstones or beat it in the mortar. They cooked it in pans, and they made cakes of it. And its taste was like the taste of pastry prepared with oil. Now, ladies and gentlemen, pastries prepared with oil, what does that say to you? Donuts. Do you ever think that God fed Israel for 40 years in the wilderness with some super nutritious donuts that he provided for them? Or at least they cooked it. They had to prepare it and all. Now, I don't know if there was different ways of cooking or preparing manna, but I just find that fascinating. Pastry prepared with oil. I don't know where else you go with that other than equivalent to our modern day donut. And that's what they had for 40 years in the wilderness. Now, researchers wonder exactly what this substance was. It is true that in that part of the world, there's a particular insect that burrows into the tamarisk tree and exudes some sap from the tamarisk tree. There's some process that goes on in the insect, and there's a small sugary globule that comes from the insect and can drop to the ground. And just as we're going to see later on with manna, and in the heat of the day, those globules just vanish. Some people think this was manna. As a matter of fact, to my understanding, I'm not an expert in this, but to my understanding, the Arabs call this substance that comes from the insects man, from the word manna. Was this it? Well, I don't really think so. But again, isn't it possible that God simply amplified miraculously a naturally occurring phenomenon? Perhaps. The bottom line is this. I don't know exactly the scientific description of how the manna came or what explanation there would be for it. I just know that God faithfully provided it for them every morning, and he fed a nation in the wilderness, even as he said it was. Now notice this one other thing I want you to see in verse 14. It says that it was as fine as frost on the ground. Do you know what that means? It means that when they went to gather it, they had to stoop over, perhaps get on their knees, and sweep it up carefully. You don't want much dirt in it, do you? Sweep it up carefully and take it back for the preparation of your household. I find this fascinating, that God taught Israel through the giving of the manna. How did he teach them? Well, first of all, he taught them, you have to cooperate with my work. God said this, I am going to do what you can't do. I'm going to rain down bread from heaven, but I'm not going to just drop it into your mouth as you open up your mouth towards heaven. God says, no, I am going to put it there and you have to receive what I come to give you, but you can only receive it with a humble heart. So bend down, stoop down, maybe get down on your knees and sweep up the bread from heaven that I provide for you.
Thanks so much for joining us today for this edition of Enduring Word Radio. Over the years in Christian media, we've seen all sorts of misrepresentations about supporting ministries. Everything from give your last dollar to if you don't give, God's work won't be done. These sorts of manipulations are not biblical, and they do not represent God's heart for giving. Here at Enduring Word Radio, we want to run fast and far from these sorts of misrepresentations. That said, it's also important for us to be faithful to share with you the ongoing financial needs that we do have. Enduring Word Radio is heard all over the United States. The program that you listen to today was professionally produced, and purchasing time on some radio stations comes with a cost. So we want to be sure to at least inform you and ask that you seek the Lord about supporting Enduring Word Radio. There's a secure option to give right on the homepage of enduringword.com. you can give a one-time gift or partner with us on a monthly basis. Again, that secure option to support Enduring Word Radio is available at enduringword.com. In closing, our thoughts on ministry is where God guides, God provides. God is faithful, and He will continue to provide for Enduring Word Radio. Again, thanks so much for joining us today for Enduring Word Radio with Pastor David Guzik. It's our hope and prayer that today's message has been a blessing to you. Until next time, may God bless you and keep you.